Hi everybody, welcome back to Microsoft Virtual Academy. To module two, we're going to discuss our deep dive on application virtualization. I'm Ronald Dockery, and this is Steve Thomas.
Hi.
Steve, what are we going to talk about in this module?
So we're going to talk about in this module server features and roles, specifically the management service, the publishing service, and the reporting service, as well as a little bit of a discussion on the content server as well. So let's dive in first with the management service. The management service is a managed web service. It leverages WCF. It's a RESTful interface. We have made drastic changes in that it runs exclusively under IIS. We use two basic interfaces to controlling the management service. We use PowerShell, and of course, the most popular is the Web UI console, which takes advantage of Silverlight. The purpose of the management server is primarily to manage entitlements. By entitlements, we mean what packages are available and who is entitled to whatever package or connection group. We also maintain a listing of the app via admins, advanced configuration of the applications. A lot of these applications in AppV are going to have a lot of extension points to integrate with the operating system. These extension points may need to be adjusted and overridden using dynamic configuration. Well, the nice things about management systems, particularly Configuration Manager and the AppV management system, is we can bring in dynamic configuration into the management system to override any default configuration within the package. We also will need to leverage the management service to configure who our respective publishing servers are, which publishing servers can actually sync with the management service to build what we call a publishing document. The management console, for those of you who have used AppV in the past, especially AppV4, have noticed that we have now moved away from MMC. MMC had its day, but we have evolved and are now using a browser-based, a web-based controller using Silverlight. The management server installation is very straightforward. We need to, of course, specify the Active Directory group or account that is authorized to manage AppV. A lot of people will make a mistake and put an account here. As far as a user account, they really should put a group account. And this goes to the previous section where we discussed proper preparation of Active Directory and users and groups. And then, of course, we're going to need to designate what the management website configuration is going to be with regards to what we're going to call the name within IIS and the port that it's going to bind to. It's very crucial if you're setting this up in a proof of concept where you may have the management service, the reporting service, the publishing service running on the same machine, that you make sure that you have them configured for separate ports. Otherwise, they're going to fail to start. So let's talk through the setup and operation of the actual management server.
So you have a demo environment here, but that should be similar to what would be on a customer site, which is showing there the VMs, et cetera.
Correct.
Yeah.
So the management service is essentially twofold. We have, of course, the console, which actually interfaces with the management service, but the management service in and of itself is pretty stateless because all of this information is going to be stored in the back-end database. For example, when I'm pulling packages up for viewing the configuration, the status of whether it's been published or not, this stuff is coming from the actual AppV database. File associations, package entitlements, all of that are inside the database. Now, obviously, we don't want people modifying and playing with the database directly. That's what this nice user-friendly interface is for. Now, if you run into problems actually connecting to the management service interface, a lot of times it's going to involve an issue with the operations of the service. And that's important to reiterate that this, again, is actually a managed web service. So you don't see the management service showing up as a service under the service control manager like we did in previous versions of AppV. The operations control of the AppV management service is actually found in the IIS administration utility, primarily in two components. The, of course, the website itself, but more importantly, the application pool. For each service that you actually install, it generates a website and, of course, a web application pool that configures the worker process. And in some cases, you might want to leverage the default configuration network service, or you might want to change the identity to that of a specific service account, especially in environments that don't want to delegate to entire computers. They might want to delegate to specific service accounts, Kerberos delegation, or they want to take advantage of other security features of later versions of Active Directory, like MSAs, or what we call managed service accounts. Now, it's important that people understand the involvement of IIS, particularly in the case that for some reason you're trying to access the management service and the console is giving you an error message saying that the management service cannot be started, the management service is encountering failure. Now, we have event logs that track that, but more importantly, what you will want to pay attention to is not just the logs that you find within AppV, but the system and application logs, because they will often at times generate IIS error messages as well. So you're going to want to monitor the operations of the AppV management service through the AppV logs. Each service will generate three specific event logs, and if you have more than one service installed on the machine, you're going to see a uniform policy library, and then of course the primary management log, and then if you enable debug and analytical logs, you'll see the private logging mechanisms as well. But again, as I said, pay attention to the Windows logs, primarily the application and the system log, as they actually will shed light on potential problems within IIS. Now, what's the quickest way to recycle the AppV management service? Well, the quickest way to recycle any publishing service or management service or any what we call AppV server service is to just simply, as an administrator, run the IIS reset command. That, of course, will recycle the services, recycle the web pools, and if you are looking to see if there are any errors upon startup, this is the first step you would want to do, because then you could actually go into the Windows application and system logs and the AppV logs and see if you run into particular problems. Notice I don't see any problems here, but when I go to the management service log, I see do we have any error logs here? Yes, we do. Ooh, virtual application connection group and metadata source is not entitled to anyone. Okay, I'll need to go check on that. Failed to refresh publishing metadata. This is a common error that happens all the time. This means that there is a specific service, a specific publishing service that is trying to generate publishing metadata from the management service and is unable to get that metadata. You might also see this in some cases when security is not set up properly, or when for some reason the management service was being recycled or being serviced for maintenance while the publishing server was trying to actually generate an update to the publishing data during its particular interval.
Will those logs, as that fixed itself, will that error go away, or will it remain in the log, or what should they do in terms of concerned should they be with the logs, or how should they?
Well, the publishing data log I generated on purpose, but if you normally see that, once you actually have corrected it, the default view of the logs will basically tell you that the publishing data refresh succeeded successfully.
Okay.
However, if you want to find out more detailed information, you will want to go back and let me pull that back up again. You will want to go into view and make sure that show analytic and debug logs are actually turned on. And then you can proceed to go into the advanced logs and actually enable some of these specific logs, like the private logs. The private logs, you only really need to enable these if you're doing some intense debugging. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily, now I have it enabled. Oops, that's not good practice, Steve. You should not leave analytical logs running constantly. They should only be turned on for troubleshooting and then immediately turned off. Bad, Steve. Hand slap there.
So I suppose as well with these errors, you know, there's information on the forums. There's information available to help people troubleshoot those as well.
Correct. In fact, one of our PFEs, Dave Falkus, has a little PowerShell script that actually can translate some of the interesting what we call H results, but some of those interesting ATV codes to user-friendly explanations.
And you have links in your blog, for example, Steve.
Correct. That kind of diagnose the error codes. We've switched completely to an ETL-based method of tracking because it performs much faster, does not create overhead, and it integrates with the rest of Windows and the Windows and System Center ecosystem. So it allows things like Ops Manager to hook in and to consume these logs, and we can take advantage of event forwarding. Mm-hmm. We're no longer using text-based logs like we used to in previous versions of ATV. Now, the publishing service. The publishing service is the most crucial service with regards to your clients. In previous versions of ATV, we used to have the be-all, end-all management server. The management server was responsible for actually entitlements, configuration control, and on the fly, generating a publishing document that could then be consumed by the ATV clients. Well, what we've done in ATV 5 is we've actually split these roles up. We now have management solely for the purposes of entitlement, and then we maintain publishing in a file-based method, not database method, on a separate service that can be scaled out. Now, it's fine if you want the publishing and management service on one machine, but they don't have to be. In fact, what's nice about this is you can maintain a management server in a central location for your central administrators, and that way the only thing you have to do is kind of scale out the publishing servers to your respective locations, especially in branch configurations. And Ronnie, do you remember in ATV 4.5 we had the streaming server and we had the management server?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have kind of built upon that by not only providing streaming services for branch locations, but also providing a file-based, XML-based publishing document. That means that, let's say you have a transcontinental cable goes down between the central location and the branch location. Well, those clients can continue to receive their actual packages as long as content is locally available and a publishing server is locally available. Now, you can't have any new entitlements while that outage is in place, but it doesn't create such a catastrophic event.
And that's why we did it.
Exactly. That's exactly why we did it.
Mm-hmm.
So the publishing server is primarily responsible for maintaining the catalog. The catalog is the published packages, the published connection groups, and any custom user and deployment configuration, and who has access to what. Now, as part of publishing refresh, clients will speak to the publishing server and get the publishing metadata. The publishing server is associated with clients either manually, which we don't want to do. We can actually use scripted PowerShell. You can actually supply this configuration upon installation, but most prefer group policy. And the nice thing about group policy in ATV 5 is we've included an ADMX file, which we'll talk about later, that actually allows you to not only supply client configuration, but also supply publishing server information as well. And of course, publishing server is stateless. Publishing server installation is, again, pretty straightforward. All we have to do during the installation is specify the management service that is to be used by the publishing service. And then, of course, like we did with the management service, we supply the website name, how it appears in IIS, and then a port binding. Now, just to recap, the management service points to a database. The publishing service during installation points to a management service. Now, post-configuration. One common misconception, Ronnie, is that when you actually specify the management service, that it will then place the publishing server into the ATV database. That is not the case. So there is some necessary post-configuration that you're going to want to do. If you've noticed this example here on the slide, you'll see a common error. And it's one of the first things you want to check if you've set up a new publishing server and you've noticed that I'm not getting any publishing information. Mm-hmm. Or I'm getting an error in the publishing server event log that says failed to generate publishing metadata. Well, one of the first things I do is I go to the management server log and I enable debug logging, and I'll notice that publishing server with so-and-so SID is not found in the database. So what that means I have to do is I have to actually go into the management service and go to the actual server section and then manually add in, or what we call register a new publishing server appropriately.
How common is that error, would you find, when you're...
It's a common rookie mistake, actually, when setting it up for the first time, but only in environments where you're setting up scaled environments. This is not an error that would actually pop up if you're doing a proof of concept where you just have one server, where you have the management server, the publishing server, and the reporting server all on one machine. And that's what we all do, especially those of us who do demos, where we don't want to have 20 VMs going at the same time. So it's one of those things where when you're learning it, you won't see the error, but when you're actually rolling it out into production, you might run into that, which is why you should always match your test environment with as much as possible to scale with your production environment. At least have a sample, you know, at least try to mimic at least one branch of that elongated tree of an infrastructure.
And that'll eliminate these gotchas as you talk about there, yeah.
Correct. So let's talk a little bit about the actual publishing configuration. Now, the publishing service is just like the management service with regards to operations. It's controlled within IIS. It runs as a worker process. But this is going to be very different in that the publishing service relies primarily on the servicing and maintaining of one very important, crucial configuration document. And it's called the publishing metadata document. Where is that metadata document located? It is located in Program Data, Microsoft, ATV server, publishing, and you'll see publishing metadata.xml. When clients sync with the actual publishing server, this is what is sent to the clients. This is what the clients process to determine, hey, here are all the packages, here are the SIDs of the groups, users, computers that actually have entitled access, and we say users and groups, but it's really groups of either users or groups of machines. Here are the targeted operating systems, the targeted architectures, if you need to. In most cases, what I do with my packages, I don't restrict operating system, or I don't restrict bitness to x64 or x86, because that just eliminates a troubleshooting variable that I run into from time to time, especially now that we have Windows 8, 8.1, 8.2, moving forward there. It also gives us the package URL of where we're actually going to be streaming the package down from upon first launch. And of course, you may see in some cases if additional configuration. If you notice there's no configuration for a lot of these packages, that means we're going to default to the configuration inside the package manifest, which is embedded inside the package. But in some cases, I may have overridden the configuration with dynamic deployment configuration. And that's when you'll start seeing some really interesting XML. Now, it's most important that you understand that you do not modify this document directly. Never, ever, 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 ever edit this document directly.
So don't edit the document, yeah?
Don't edit the document directly. No, this is not designed for... The only modifications to this document that are actually supported come through not even the publishing service, but come through monitoring and managing the document on the management server, not even directly. The management server maintains a local copy of the publishing metadata that it generates from the information within the actual SQL database. So it all comes from the SQL database. The SQL database, if you notice, has tables related to not just applications, but also configuration, file type associations, shell extensions, connection groups, connection group membership. All of that is taken dynamically from the database and placed into a flat XML file. Now the publishing service synchronizes two ways with the management service. Manually, which sometimes I have to do if I'm testing and I've entitled a package and I don't want to wait for the interval, so I'll just recycle the publishing service using an IIS reset, and that'll do a resync with the actual management service. But you can also control the automatic interval using a configuration value in the registry. You have what's called the publishing management server refresh interval and the publishing management server timeout. Notice the interval defaults to 10 minutes. Now, I generally tell people in production, leave this alone. Now, if you're in test and you don't want to necessarily deal with this long interval because you don't have time to deal with this interval, you can go ahead and adjust this refresh interval. But what a lot of people will do when they're in test is they'll actually just, when they entitle the package on the management service, then they'll just simply go to the publishing management or the publishing service if it's on the same machine or on a different machine and run an IIS reset to go ahead and trigger that actual update. All right, the reporting service. The reporting service is a method of tracking application usage for AppV virtual applications and managing maintaining records of the AppV clients and AppV users using those applications. The reporting service is technically optional. It collects reporting data from the clients in XML and stores it into a database, at first in temporary tables, and then it processes the data into more refined tables using stored procedures. There is no built-in UI to reporting. How you handle this data is going to ultimately be up to you. Ronnie, a lot of people got on the bandwagon and immediately jumped to SSRS, but you know, some users were not really experienced with SSRS and felt a little bit intimidated by SSRS. So what we've done in the past few months is we provided a series of canned reports for SSRS that's available from the Microsoft Download Center. So just go to the Download Center and put in the keywords AppV SSRS reports and it'll be the first hit. What I tell people is, you know, I don't really use SSRS either. I'm still kind of an Access Excel person. And I'm able to actually go right to that data source from Excel or from Access, and I generate my reports that way. Now, this new generation kind of picks on me for that, but it's important to mention that. Even if that says something about me, because it speaks to the flexibility of how we handle the reporting database. Now, I find the reporting service absolutely crucial in non-persistent scenarios. We have a lot of customers out there that are leveraging non-persistent VDI using the Microsoft stack. They're using a lot of our partner solutions like Citrix Xen Desktop. They're using non-persistent RDS as well, using our solution plus Xen App through Citrix Provisioning Services. And reporting services is crucial because it allows you to actually maintain tracking and reporting of application usage that is then sent to the reporting service upon logout. Or you can customize that through a scheduled task. What's great about that is that actually prevents loss of auditing in these non-persistent scenarios, because the key thing about non-persistent scenarios is they're non-persistent, meaning they're going to be refreshed. They're going to actually be recycled in daily or weekly intervals. So, again, in previous versions of AppV, we had a series of canned reports, but we wanted to provide our customers more flexibility and more options. We didn't want to lock them into a specific method of reporting, so we now encourage you to use SSRS or your preferred report viewer to view reporting data. And again, we have samples of this available And for the reporting database installation, like the previous services, all you have to do is point to the configuration source. In the case of reporting, it's a reporting database. It's a different database. Ronnie, we used to have this all in one gigantic database. We've split these up into two databases for ATV5. So the reporting database, in case it gets populated or overloaded, it won't affect the performance of the management service.
That's smart.
And again, the reporting database can be on a remote SQL, either default instance or a named instance, and the default ATV service or ATV reporting service database name is ATV reporting.
So if somebody was migrating from 4 to 5, what are the implications of that? Is that a challenge for them to migrate their database, or how does that actually work?
Well, that's the thing. Our migration strategy for V4 and V5 is coexistence. Mm-hmm. And the database information itself cannot be migrated.
Yes.
But what we recommend is that while you're in the process of migrating, you stand up parallel infrastructures. And while your ATV4 is actually still tracking usage for your ATV4 clients, your ATV5 can begin tracking for your ATV5 clients as well. And here's the thing. Because we support coexistence and the same clients on the same machine, you'll actually be able to track both styles of applications from the same machine using both systems.
That's fantastic, yeah. So it's kind of a safe way of doing it, by degrees, yeah.
Correct. All right, so let's talk about the reporting service real quick and how it actually operates. So the reporting service, and to look at this in detail, it's important to actually go ahead and bring up an actual client. Now, reporting is completely out of band from management and publishing, which means that if you do not have reporting turned on, so be it. It doesn't affect the delivery of the applications. I want to stress that reporting is strictly reporting. It's not a means of application control. It is an excellent means of auditing, but not as an application lockdown solution. So the most important thing to remember with reporting is if you want to enable reporting, it has to be not only be enabled, but you must tell it to specifically point to a reporting service. And we, in addition to segmenting reporting from the actual management and publishing, we also introduce randomization to prevent the reporting services from being overloaded and to actually prevent everybody from phoning home at the same time when it comes to reporting. And that's very important because of the fact that we will often have overloads of users running running applications and launching applications when they first get into work, and then of course when they're going home during the day. So all of this can be controlled through configuration, including things such as data cache limit and how much data we're going to actually cache locally before we actually upload data. Data can actually be uploaded automatically, or you can actually leverage it manually using the send at the client report command. Now, before you do that, where is the reporting data actually stored? Well, the reporting data is actually stored on a location on the computer. And if you actually go into the registry and look at the configuration of the ATV client, you'll see that under reporting, you'll have the location of the actual cache file. Now, I'm pulling this up because I just want to show you the reporting data and what's actually stored in the reporting data. And right now, nothing. because I haven't launched anything. This is a new client. So, interesting, I chose the wrong client instead of the one that actually had the populated cached information. But you're gonna see applications as they're launched. Well, let me launch an application real quick. I believe I've delivered Office to this. So let me pull up Word.
And we support all the versions of Word, all of Office 2010, 2013, et cetera, supported.
Right. Right now I have the virtualized Office 2013 package here, but we can also use Office 2010. We can also use Office 2007, except Office 2007 and 2010, you actually have to sequence yourself, whereas we actually provide for you an AppV package for 2013. Okay, so let me go back here and as you can see, I've launched Word, and we now track Word through the application record. So I'm going to actually do a Word wrap here, and you'll see Word 2013, the version, the server that it actually pulled, actually launched it from. The actual package version, the date launched, and of course the current launch status, which that tells me if it's currently in use or currently not. Now, since I shut it down, obviously the launch status is now back to zero. Now, all this information is going to be cached in this XML file, and this is the data that's actually going to be uploaded to the AppV reporting server, who is in turn going to actually then put this into the AppV reporting database, which again is a separate database altogether from the AppV management server. And of course, not a lot to the AppV reporting database. It's first going to go into the unprocessed locations, and then the data will then be processed, duplicates will be purged, because sometimes you might have duplicates from the same machine, and then that will be in the permanent tables in application usage, client information, package information, which these are the three main tables that you will want to query if you're actually generating reports yourself. So finally, I want to talk about content and the content servers. The content server is probably the most important asset of all, because this is where your applications are stored and this is where your applications will stream from. The content server is the streaming source, whether it's going to be web-based streaming or file-based streaming. It's the package source for all of your clients in terms of where the applications originate from. And we can use a content store for either stream to disk or what we call stream to memory scenarios using the shared content store. When you leverage a shared content store, we're not caching the actual package assets fully on the actual clients. They're going to just be maintained in memory. So that turns the content server into an even more crucial component. But this is a feature that has been well received and welcomed, especially in our RDS and VDI scenarios, because it allows to drastically reduce the storage footprint of applications. In most cases,
and one of our customers saved 16 terabytes.
And
that was across about 4,000 desks. It wasn't a huge number of desks, but they actually added it all up and were like, wow.
And the great thing about that is it's just flipping one bit on the client. You just change the content store mode, or the shared content store mode, from 0 to 1. No additional management requirements on the server side. Now, obviously, you want to ensure that you're leveraging content and the protocols and the method appropriate with the target. In the case of like VDI and data centers, you're going to want to use SMB3, SMB2. If you're providing content to laptops or devices that are actually going to be caching this fully and the bandwidth might not actually be always plentiful, you're going to want to leverage something that takes advantage of that, like HTTP, especially if you're taking advantage of technology such as branch caching. So let's walk through briefly things that we want to remember with regards to content. The content share can be made available as a network share. It can also be made available as a web directory. If you make this available as a web directory, you're going to want to actually go into IIS, though, and ensure that you've actually added under the configuration of the site itself. And it could be the same site as the management service, or it could be, if it's a separate content server, it's going to be the default website. But you're going to want to make sure that you've configured the MIME types appropriately. The MIME types are basically the types of content that can actually be streamed over the HTTP protocol. And by default, .atv or the .atv extension is not made available, even though it mirrors the zip because it's labeled .atv and not created as a MIME type, it will not stream. This is another one of those common rookie mistakes when you're actually streaming through HTTP. So ensure that you actually add in the actual MIME type appropriately. In this case, you're going to add in .atv. Now, in previous versions, if you did web streaming, you had to add in other stuff as well. But because everything within an .atv package is, or an .atv application package is strictly within the .atv file itself, this is the only MIME type that you're actually going to have to create. So let's recap what we talked about. We first talked about the management service, and then we follow that with the publishing service and the reporting service, the three primary web services that make up the .atv management infrastructure. And then we closed it out with managing the content servers, particularly file-based and web-based content management, and some of the gotchas to avoid with that.
Thanks, Steve. That was great. In the next module, we talk about client management. Hopefully, you can stick with us. Thank you.